Hello, my bubbalas. It is nice to be here with all of you. I haven't done a podcast in a little bit. I took a couple weeks off over the holidays and then just have lots to cover. Been writing a bit more than podcasting. So, you know, the most important thing is I'm going on a trip. I'm leaving tomorrow, going to an event that I've been to twice before. It's the World Economic Forum in Davos. It's a very cool event. It's controversial. It is fun. It sort of has a feel like it's Coachella for business or Coachella for ideas. Like, it's not a music festival, but it has that same sort of, like, it's a crazy 5 days and it's frenetic. And then you come back and you're like, whoa, what just happened? That was wild. You know, it's 4 or 5 days of networking and meetings and listening to speakers, but also going to some parties and going into events. And there's just tons going on. I think to understand this, let's talk first about what is the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum, or WEF, as people refer to it, is an organization that promotes development, equality, social goals, business goals, and generally is focused on improving the state of the world. And every year, they host an event in Davos, Switzerland. It's their annual meeting where the great and the good get together and talk about trends and issues and how to make the world a better place. And it's been around for 52 years, I want to say, since the early 70s. It was founded by a guy named Klaus Schwab. He's now in his mid-80s and still going strong. There is this perception that WEF is synonymous with, like, a kind of shadowy cabal of powerful people that are trying to control the world. That this is the Illuminati, right? That this meeting and this organization is where the Illuminati get together and decide how they're going to manipulate everyone. I think there's probably a little bit of credibility to that in a sense. You know, you're getting some of the richest and most powerful people together in one town. Business leaders, political leaders, social leaders. You're getting these people together in one small town to meet with each other for 5 days. So naturally, there's going to be a sharing of ideas. I don't think this is the cigar smoke filled back room that some are imagining. There are ideas that take hold at WEF and then grow in popularity. It was at WEF a few years ago that Greta Thunberg came out and gave an impassioned speech about protecting the environment. And there were many initiatives that came as a result of that speech. And now, as we see the war in Ukraine and the power that Russia exerts over Germany, because Germany has shut down all of their nuclear plants thanks to Greta, maybe we can recognize that there are some destructive forces, that things that seem like consensus goods are not always a good thing. So let's talk a little bit about the actual events, because I think it is kind of a mystery to a lot of people. So Davos is a town in Switzerland. It's about a 2-hour drive from Zurich. You can take the train there. There's a small airport where you can land private jets. And, you know, there's no, like, commercial flights into Davos. And it's a ski town. It's a sleepy ski town for the rest of the year in the middle of the mountains. And then for a week, it's taken over by WEF. So the main part of town, there is one long street called the Promenade. And during the year, the promenade is lined with shops. You know, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. There's a couple of hotels. It's not a big town. And at the end of the promenade, is a huge open space, and for WEF every year, they set up this giant tent, and I mean really an enormous tent. And that tent is where they have the official annual meeting. And that's it's all live streamed. Anyone can watch it if you want to. You'll certainly see articles in the press about this stuff happening at the annual meeting, but it's, I find, kind of anodyne. I mean, I've never actually gone to the actual annual meeting. But it's all sort of, you know, let me tell you a lecture about important social issues in a very non-offensive kind of way. And then along the promenade, on both sides of the street, during the year, these are shops, you know, all the stores. And then that one week of the year, all of these big companies come to town and they rent out those shops, and they pay a fortune to rent out those shops and to convert them into little lounges devoted to networking and to their business. So there's the Microsoft Cafe and the Facebook Chalet, and Accenture has a place, and the Wall Street Journal, and they make them kind of fancy, and they have nice coffee, and then there's rooms for small one-on-one meetings. And so you can, you know, just walk down the street and pop your head, and that part is open to anyone. And so the way it works is, you need a special kind of badge to get into the actual Congress meeting in that tent. You need a white badge to get in there. Those are like $100,000, but you need to be invited to get one. And then separate from the white badge, you just need another kind of like security pass to get in to anywhere along the promenade. And you just apply for the security pass and you get one. And then you can go to any of these events that you want to. And they all have great events. The Bloomberg events and the Wall Street Journal and the Indonesia House. And they all have nice events with interesting speakers, and they're trying to make themselves look good. And I've seen great speakers. I've learned a ton. I've attended great events. I don't think you need a white badge. I don't think you need to go see Mark Zuckerberg give a speech. I don't think it's meaningful to go see a speaker talking about why animals are bad for the environment and we need to all start eating crickets. And then it turns out that it's a guy who owns a cricket farm. Like, I don't see a lot of value in that, because all of those people end up going to the same parties and the same events all along the promenade. So you can get access to these people. And that's really one of the most remarkable parts about going to Davos for WEF, is that you get one-on-one access with CEOs, CFOs of huge companies, folks that it would be hard to get access with to, and suddenly you can schmooze with them and network. You really can do a lot of great networking. This is like business camp. I mean, I don't even know how else to describe it. Now, accommodations are a pain in the ass. There are a couple of hotels in town. The rooms go for like $20,000 a night, and you have to be one of the white badge holders to get a room. So that ain't happening. Everyone else crams into houses and apartments in town. And, you know, in 2019, that was the first time I went. I was in a house I shared with 10 other people. And I even shared a room. So it was me and this other guy. I don't even remember his name. We shared a room together in this house. I think I paid about $3,000 for a bed in a shared room for the 5 days that I was there. And the house was owned by this Sri Lankan woman and her Swiss husband. They rented the house out to this guy, Mark. And then Mark turned around and subletted it to, you know, 10 people or something, and turned a tidy little profit. The second year that I went, which was 2020, it was right before COVID, I reached out to the Sri Lankan woman directly. She owns another house across the street. And it was smaller. It was like a two-bedroom house. So I stayed there. I rented out one of the rooms and I kept one for myself. And this year I was hoping to rent the house from the Sri Lankan woman and be able to sublet it myself. And then she decided, first she said yes, then she decided to do it with this guy, Mark, again. So thankfully, she found me. One of her neighbors has an extra bedroom. So I'm sharing a room with this guy called Olaf. I've met Olaf before in 2019 and 2020. So Olaf and I are sharing a room in her house. It's, you know, a 15-minute walk from the promenade. It'll be convenient, easy to do it. The only thing I'm really concerned about is that she has dogs. She has Dalmatians. I fucking hate dogs to begin with, but Dalmatians are like a smidge away from pit bulls. They are wild and violent and noisy, gross animals. And I'm not thrilled about, you know, getting bitten or eaten in the house with these dogs the whole time. So maybe I should buy some like Xanax and crumble it up in their food or something so that they can leave me alone. So yeah, that's, you know, that's like the logistics of it. There's a ton of events. They are great events. This year I, you know, I have the knowledge and the foresight to pre-register for things. So I've got a good agenda of events. I'm going to a breakfast hosted by the Wall Street Journal and a Bloomberg event and Mercer, this consulting firm, they're doing one. There's a Swedish lunch where they have like Swedish meatballs and tell you about investing in Sweden. There's something hosted by INSEAD, the business school, and another one hosted by MIT. There's some cool stuff. There was a great one hosted by PricewaterhouseCoopers, by PwC, in 2020, where I managed to get some one-on-one time with Theresa May, the former Prime Minister of England. And that was cool. I got to chat with her. I asked her if she thinks that leaders in the Western world had done enough to prevent the Chinese from militarizing the South China Sea. And she was quite blunt. She said, no, I think that's going to be one of our big regrets of her administration and the Obama administration. And, you know, that's a cool thing to be able to get that kind of access. So I've met great people each year and gotten that kind of access. I hosted events in 2019 and 2020. I had the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, a man named Howard Lutnick. Cantor Fitzgerald's like a mid-sized investment bank and broker-dealer, and Howard goes to WEF every year, and I invited him to come do a speaking event. So we did one. You can find it on YouTube, on the future of investment banking. And I had Howard Lutnick and Joe Lubin. Joe is the co-founder and creator of Ethereum. And I chatted with the two of them for an hour about the future of investment banking and financial services. That was a cool event. The second year, I hosted Howard again, and we talked on a stage for like 40 minutes about technology and financial services. So, you know, great events. And hopefully this ends up working out nicely. You know, hopefully things go well with Olaf and with the schmoozing, and I don't have to shoot the dogs. I'm there to absorb ideas. I'm there to network. I'm there to understand what is trendy, what is consensus, what is out of consensus. And I'll share it with you guys. I'm very transparent about it. And I'll share what I learn on the podcast. And you know, if I have time, I'll write some little dispatches from Davos and put them on the Substack. And hopefully it'll be something good. There are new drugs on the market for treating weight loss and diabetes. And the one that's maybe controversial, I don't know if that's the right word for it, the most popular one right now is something called Ozempic. Ozempic is a large dose of a drug used to treat diabetes called semaglutide. And apparently it's very effective. You start taking Ozempic and you start losing weight pretty fast. It's very expensive. It costs like $17,000 a year. And so it's for rich fat people. And, you know, I think there's some controversy because there's sort of a shortage of the drug. And so if you are, you know, a rich fat person taking it, it means that there's some like poor diabetic who's not getting access to it, which means that maybe they're going to lose a limb or something because you're rich and fat and you don't want to exercise. I think it's meant to be an alternative to surgery, like bariatric surgery. That's the surgery where they like tie your stomach in a knot so that you can't fit too much food in there. And instead of surgery, you can now take Ozempic. It's expensive. And you know, there's other drugs on the market that are similar. They're all expensive. They're all controversial. You know, we have this massive epidemic of obesity in this country, and obesity, I'm not a doctor, but I think obesity is what underpins just about every other major health problem, right? Like if you are not fat, you are far less likely to have kidney disease and heart disease and liver disease. I think the three causes of dying for most people, and again, it's not everybody. I know there's other people who have bad luck and bad health and they can't identify what, but like the three main reasons are because you are fat, because you drink, and because you smoke. That's it. And if you do those things, your probability of getting sick, younger, and dying are much higher. So don't do those things, right? Don't drink, don't smoke, don't be a fat ass. But I guess if you are a fat ass, take this medication if you can afford it. Or just work out, right? Like, why is it so controversial to say, like, just do some fucking exercise. Go for a walk. Go on a diet and go for a walk. Why is that so controversial? I get it. It's not very kind and compassionate, but so fucking what? So what? Stop sitting there stuffing Twinkies into your mouth. Go out and go for a run. And I've written extensively and talked extensively about how much you can blame the food companies and the sugar lobby. Remember that in the 1960s, when it was starting to become apparent that sugar is bad for you, the sugar industry, and this is all very well documented, the sugar industry paid some scientists at Harvard $6,000 to write a paper that said, sugar doesn't make you fat, only saturated fat makes you fat. And for 50 years, more than 50 years really, that was considered conventional wisdom. Remember that food pyramid on the side of every box of food that you bought that said you should have like 10 servings of bread a day and minimal amounts of meat? And it turned out that that's like the worst diet advice that you can give people. I'm not saying you should be cramming hot dogs down your gullet all day long. But people are loading up all their calories on carbs. No wonder there's an epidemic of diabetes and obesity. That shit is bad for you. And now everybody needs Ozempic. I mean, this financially worked out great for the pharma lobby and the sugar lobby. Let's sell everybody the shitty food and then let's sell them the medication for it. There was a piece in the press this week about how some medical group is saying that we should give Ozempic to children, or like the child version of this, give fat kids this right away. Don't tell them to work out. Don't put them on a diet. Just give them drugs. Isn't that charming? The pharmaceutical lobby out there preaching about, oh, wow, this kid, he's got some behavior problems. Give him Ritalin. He's fat. Give him Ozempic. How screwed up is it that we allow the pharmaceutical lobby in this country to hold so much sway that instead of just telling people the obvious thing, run around, eat healthier, learn some basic facts about nutrition, and we're like, nah, fuck it, give him Ozempic. I would guess that TLC is not thrilled about this. You know, TLC, remember TLC was the TV station? It was the learning channel. It was created in like the 1980s to do educational programming. And somewhere along the line, the learning channel became something different. And they were like, let's just make TV about the most grotesque people in America. Let's find the grossest and saddest people and make a spectacle out of them. And that's what it is now. It's just shows called like My 1,000-Pound Life and My 2,000-Pound Aunt and shit like that. That's the learning channel. Really, it's reality shows. My 600-Pound Life, and they have another one called Little People, Big World about dwarves having children. 1,000-Pound Sisters. And it's a weird sort of voyeurism to watch a show like this Right? Because the only reason you watch it is because of a morbid curiosity. Like, how do they get up? Do they just live on the couch? Do they sleep sitting up? Can they move their arms? Where do they have to put the cream so they don't get a rash in between, you know, this fold and that fold? It's different from other types of things. Like, I've watched every episode of Cops. There's over 1,100 of them, by the way. And I've watched every episode of Cops. And that's also a kind of voyeurism. But it's different because Cops is genuine. You are watching someone. They're not acting. They are at the lowest moment of their life. They are having their freedom taken away. And you are seeing it videoed in real time. And that is remarkable. I don't know any place else where you can watch that kind of real emotion and human experience. I don't think that some show on TLC is comparable. And by the way, if those people take the Ozempic, I don't know if they're going to be fat enough to be on the show. They're going to have to make a new show. Like, did you take the Ozempic and lose the weight? That's going to be the new reality show. And by the way, as long as we're talking about the lobbyists that are pushing for these, the normalization of this stuff, let's not forget the fat activism movement, where you have these obese people on the cover of Cosmopolitan magazine and Women's Health magazine. You put some 400-pound woman on the cover of the magazine with a big headline that says, "This is healthy." Let me tell you, it's not healthy. It is obviously not healthy. That's why everyone's dying from this stuff. It's bullshit. They're telling you this because they want you to be a fat ass, because they want you to eat more and then take the meds. Don't let them win. Don't let them do that to you. It is not healthy being in obese shit. Don't do it. Fat activism is a destructive movement. And I get it. Fat people have feelings. I'm sorry. I'm not here to offend you. I'm just trying to say it like it is. Sorry you're upset about it. Just go work out. Otherwise, you're going to die at 50. Now watch, I'm probably going to die at 50 after I just said that. The Vietnamese have more or less cornered the market on smoothies in New York City. They have this great business with those little carts. They buy fruit that's a couple days old. Maybe it's slightly bruised. But when you put it in a blender, no one can tell. So they buy a banana and an apple for a few pennies. They blend it. And then they sell it for $8. And that is a great business. Remember, like, drinking smoothies used to be considered like something that only fancy people do. Like, you'd be the butt of jokes because you wanted some blended fruit on the go. Well, no more. The solution is BlendJet 2. It's a portable blender that allows you to make smoothies at work, a protein shake at the gym, even at the beach. What? Blending at the beach? What is this? A blender at the gym? What? Anyways, BlendJet 2 is small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through ice and frozen fruit with ease. BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. It lasts for 15 plus blends and recharges quickly via USB-C. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go. With over 30 plus colors and patterns to choose from, there's a BlendJet 2 to complement just about any style. I rock the urban camo print because I'm a certified badass. What are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today. And be sure to use the promo code THELEESHOW12 to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. That's THELEESHOW and the numbers 1-2 to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. You know, this guy, Andrew Tate, was arrested a couple of weeks ago. And Andrew Tate is the world's biggest douche. He's this guy who lives in Romania. And he talks about how men are feminized or sissified or whatever. I mean, I've listened to him a couple of times. It is painful to listen to him. I do not understand why it's appealing to hear this guy. And he goes on and on about how you have to be a real man and depression isn't real and you got to own women and control women and, like, you know, the you've been cowed by the women and the liberals. That's his shtick. And he posts pictures of himself with his sports cars, with the Lamborghinis, the real cheese dick kind of stuff. He's got a separate operation called Hustlers University, where you pay him like $50 a month. And he teaches you stuff like how to get ahead. You know, you really could, I think, teach people how to hustle. But that's not what this is. This is like, let me teach you how to do search engine optimization and drop shipping. You're not going to make a lot of money doing that. That's not, this is like signing up for Trump University or some other sort of scam. You know, there's like a vague similarity here to those guys who did courses in how to pick up women. Remember, there was that guy who called himself Mystery, and he wrote a book like How to Seduce Women, and he would host these seminars. Men would pay him like thousands of dollars to go to his weekend long seminars, where he'd spend the whole day doing like motivational speeches and technique for how to pick women up. And then the weirdest part was then all the men would go out together at night. Could you imagine like 50 men who all just spent the day listening to some creepy character tell them about how to seduce women, and they all show up at the bar together, all revved up and rapey? That is just, that's a disaster waiting to happen. So this guy, Andrew Tate, who is the human personification of Axe body spray, this guy, his biggest business, it seems, is like a webcam operation. He's got one of the biggest in the world, and he's in Romania. He's got legions of women working as cam girls. And I guess that, you know, the premise of the business is like you pay and subscribe, and then he's got these women and he's taking a cut of it. And I guess the allegation is either that he forced these women to be there, or that somehow they were like trafficked. I don't even know what the fuck trafficked means anymore. But he's in Romania. Like, how expensive could it be to just find women who want to be there? Right? Like, where are these women coming from that he's got to force them into this? Like, the women who are desirable on these operations, he's not finding like Bangladeshi women. So who are the poorer people that he's finding? Are they from like some shittier part of Russia? And isn't it just cheaper to have women who want to be there instead of having like security guards and surveillance everywhere? That can't be great. And this whole thing came about because he got into a Twitter war of his own making, by the way. He started it with Greta Thunberg. He tweeted some mean stuff at her, and they went back and forth. And eventually he posted a picture of himself holding a pizza box from like Romanian Domino's. And then the Romanian police saw that and they were like, haha, we know you're here. And then they came and arrested him. I mean, this guy is such a schmuck. I don't know if he's a human trafficker. It all sounds a little strange to me, but he is a huge schmuck. What is trafficking? I wrote about this a little bit this week. Like, what is it? It feels like it's some sort of right-wing buzzword. Like, the dumbest portion of the MAGA crowd is now somehow convinced that like all the Democratic leadership was in cahoots with Jeffrey Epstein to traffic people. But what the fuck is trafficking? It's such a weird term. Like, I used to think it meant, you know, you've got like a bunch of poor Russian women in a shipping container, like season two of The Wire. But what does this mean, this trafficking? It's like some weird Republican dog whistle. Now, groomer is another one where you've got this like right-wing euphemism for being gay while around children. And that somehow it is bad and dangerous if you are a gay teacher and you have a photo of your husband sitting on your desk, then somehow it implies what? That you're trying to teach kids about your gay lifestyle, and the implication is that you're trying to groom them to follow in your footsteps? That is one of the most offensive premises I can imagine. But I think these religious Christian Republicans, they used to be able to openly criticize gays and gay marriage, and now suddenly they can't. That is not socially acceptable anymore in most circles. So instead they have a euphemism so they can say it out loud. Groomer. Like that's some urgent problem. It is bullshit. It is a classic smear of gay people implying that there is a connection to pedophilia. That's what it is. And I think the Christian right had to repress this for a while, and now they can just say it out loud. It drives me nuts watching these weird buzzwords get co-opted. And there's a part of me, I gotta wonder, is this done just to distract the stupids so that the dumbest among us are screaming about the groomers and the more sophisticated people in power can actually go and carve the world up the way that they want it? Is that what the real Illuminati is doing while the morons are distracted talking about groomers? It's such an offensive concept. Speaking of offensive and stupid, I think we still have to talk about Prince Harry. Is he even a prince anymore? Isn't he just Harry? Is he even still in line for the throne? Wouldn't that be funny if this guy turned out to be like King Ralph? The rest of them die and then he takes power. Do you remember when he did that interview with Oprah last year when Harry and Meghan did that? I watched it and I said it at the time. It was so stupid. It was stupid because, first of all, what did Meghan expect when she married into this family? This family of intergalactic lizard people that have been racist for like 2,000 years or something. And then she's surprised that they're racist. The whole thing felt fake. It felt trumped up and staged. It felt like she was manipulative. She didn't feel like a credible victim. Neither did Harry. How do you feel bad for this guy? He's like, oh, we lived in the palace and then we moved to a different palace in America. How can you feel bad for him? Meghan sunk her claws into him and used it to turn him into a massive money-grubbing opportunity where they, I guess, quit the royal family and got this massive book deal and a Netflix deal. I think they got $150 million for that stupid Netflix show. And just saying such boring, banal kind of stuff. They have this book out there. I've read a lot of excerpts from it. It is so boring. It's all just, you know, let me tell you about the time that Meghan met the Queen and Meghan had an Altoid and then the Queen ate a string bean. And it's so boring. Nobody cares. That's not an inside scoop. It's an ephes. It is nothing. Tell us about the good stuff. Tell us about how your father had your mother killed in Paris. Tell us about how he's not even your real dad. You know, just Google Prince Harry, real father. And you click on images, and the first thing you see is a ton of pictures of Prince Harry next to this guy that Princess Diana was shtupping, named James Hewitt. Look at the pictures side by side. There is no doubt about it. That's his real dad. Or as Tim Dillon said, tell us about the time when the Queen stood up and there was some like lizard eggs that hatched and then, you know, some dragons flew away or some shit. Don't tell us about the boring stuff. They got $17.5 million advance for this book and there's another $17.5 million coming later. Who would buy this? So boring. I mean, who even buys books like this, period, right? People buy magazines, they read an article, but could you imagine reading an entire book of this stuff? I think reading nonfiction books is kind of weird to begin with, but like reading nonfiction books about stuff like that feels very obsolete to me. And I doubt that this ends up money good for the publishers. This whole business model, I doubt, ends well. You know, weird things have happened, though. Maybe everyone's going to buy it. What do I know? Well, that's all for now, folks. Thanks again for joining. Remember, I'll keep you updated on Substack, on Twitter, LeeBressler.substack.com. can find us there. Remember to sign up to become a subscriber. Tell your friends about it. I'll post as many dispatches as I can from WEF, and we'll be back with more soon.